And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News, with Paul Hill.
A new Church of England service for transgender people could harm children, an open letter signed by more than 2,000 clergy has claimed. Some 2,155 bishops, priests and lay members of the church have added their names to the letter, which condemns new guidance released last month on gender transition. In December, the church announced vicars would now be able to hold a special service so transgender people could celebrate their new identities. But there has been a steadily growing backlash to the proposals, culminating in an open letter which attacks them as deeply concerning and lacking in serious theological analysis. The signatories caution rapidly developing theories about gender could cause more harm than good to children experiencing gender dysphoria and call on the Church of England's House of Bishops, which approved the reforms last year, to revise, postpone or withdraw them until concerns have been addressed. The letter states that while gender dysphoria was an emotionally painful experience that requires understanding, support and compassion, the House of Bishops appears to have ignored the potential for damage caused by novel and largely untested theories about sex and gender. It also argues the guidance implicitly undermines the Church's understanding of marriage by endorsing the idea there is no difference between male and female. Among the senior Anglicans who have added their names to the letter are two archdeacons, two former bishops, and a member of the Archbishop's Council, one of the C of E's central governing bodies. Among the other groups to have criticised the new liturgy is the Church of England Evangelical Council, which said in a statement the guidance was highly divisive and theologically and pastorally questionable. Even the Bishop of Blackburn, a leading evangelical who piloted the process of drawing up the gender transition service, has now disavowed his own reforms and said he regretted his involvement in the process. Other evangelical leaders have castigated the service as a false gospel which denies the teachings of Jesus Christ. But a spokesman for the Church of England insisted the guidance had not changed the Church's doctrine on sexuality or gender. The guidance is not a restatement or a new statement on matters relating to gender, nor does it change the Church of England's teaching. The Pope's envoy to France is under investigation for an alleged sexual assault on a male Paris City Hall staffer during an official event last month. Luigi Ventura, 74, has served as the papal nuncio, the pontiff's diplomatic representative, in Paris since 2009. He is accused of molesting the man at City Hall on January the 17th when the nuncio attended a New Year's address to diplomats, religious leaders and civil society figures by the mayor, Anne Hidalgo. The Paris prosecutor's office said the investigation was opened after City Hall lodged a complaint 6 days later. Archbishop Ventura is accused of inappropriately touching the man, whose identity has not been disclosed. He was described as a member of City Hall's General Delegation for International Relations. The nuncio repeatedly let his hands wander, according to a City Hall source. A source close to the case said, "This is a complicated matter because Archbishop Ventura is a diplomat and he will want to invoke his right to diplomatic immunity from prosecution." Archbishop Ventura declined to comment. A Vatican spokesman said, "The Holy See is waiting for the investigation's conclusion." A spokesman, Alessandro Ghisotti, said the Vatican had learned about the investigation from media reports. The Archbishop was born in Borgosatollo, northern Italy, in 1944 and began working for the diplomatic service of the Holy See in 1978, nearly 10 years after he was ordained as a priest. Before being posted in Paris, he served in Brazil, Bolivia and the UK until 1984. He was then appointed to the Section for Relations with States as the Vatican Secretariat of State until 1995, later serving as nuncio in Ivory Coast, Burkina Faso and Niger. In 1999, he was named Papal Nuncio to Chile and Canada in 2001. Roman Catholics in France have been shocked by allegations of child sexual abuse by priests and the Archbishop of Lyon, Cardinal Philippe Barbarin, and who's on trial of charges of helping to cover it up. A verdict is due on March the 7th. Bernard Prainer, French priest involved in the scandal, has been trying to block the release of a film about child abuse by priests by the acclaimed director François Ozon, best known for Swimming Pool, starring Charlotte Rampling. The film was premiered in Berlin and is due for release in France on Wednesday. A new book, due to be published next week, claims that about 80% of priests at the Vatican are homosexual. The book In the Closet of the Vatican, by a French author and journalist, Frédéric Martel, is based on 1,500 interviews with priests, cardinals, Vatican ambassadors, seminarians, and a member of the Swiss Guard, the Pope's private army. Mr. Martel claims that some gay priests are in relationships, while others frequent male prostitutes. Some are in denial, while others are gay but celibate. The book will be published on the opening day of a big conference at the Vatican on preventing the sexual abuse of children and minors by clergy. The conference will be attended by bishops and archbishops from around the world, specifically the 130 presidents of national bishops' conferences. Campaign groups and survivors of sex abuse by priests are sceptical that the three-day event will achieve anything concrete. There can be few teachers in the world who have not privately cursed the kids in their classroom as little devils. Italy has now gone one step further, offering teachers the chance to take exorcism courses. An intensive 40-hour course in Exorcism and Prayers of Liberation is now available to teachers through the Ministry of Education. The course, which costs €400 per participant, will be held at the Pontifical University of Regina Apostolorum, a Vatican-affiliated university in Rome, which holds annual exorcism conventions for Catholic priests from around the world. Teachers, especially those who teach religion, will be lectured about the peculiar aspects of exorcism and prayers of liberation, and learn how to correctly practice the dark art of casting out the devil. The initiative was criticized as a return to the Dark Ages by opposition politicians and widely mocked on social media. MPs said the populist coalition should concentrate on basic issues such as dilapidated schools, some of which even lack lavatory paper, rather than conjuring out demons and talking in tongues. Schools are not safe, gyms are not fit to be used, and teachers are not properly paid. And what does the education minister do? He promotes exorcism courses. We're not in the Middle Ages, said Laura Boldrini, an opposition Cefalenta MP and former parliamentary speaker. Schools need to prepare young people for the challenges of the future. Schools are collapsing, so maybe the only option left is to start praying, said Nicola Frattini, the national secretary of a small opposition party, Liberi Uguali. There was no shortage of ironic commentary on social media. Sorry, but is it 2019 or 1019, wrote one user, while others remarked, school is hell, but let's not go too far, and any other ideas for returning to the medieval era. The government said there was nothing political about the course being offered to teachers. It is one of around 30,000 courses that the Education Ministry posts on Professional Development Portal to help teachers further their careers. Universities are permitted to insert the courses they run into the system, said Mario Pittoni, a senator from the League, the right-wing party that governs in an uneasy alliance with the anti-establishment Five Star Movement. Sundials are at risk of dying out, a Cambridge expert has suggested, as he lamented the extraordinary challenge of getting young people interested in the timepieces. Dr. Frank King estimated sundial experts were now down to the last 100 around the world. He said few young people were rigorously tackling the maths required to design the timepieces, with British schools scraping the surface when it came to algebra, trigonometry, and geometry. The sundial enthusiast, 76, a former computer science lecturer at Cambridge, is one of the leading experts in the field, and designed iconic British timepieces, including the 22-metre New Mark on the London Stock Exchange, which measures 22 metres long, and the Golden Jubilee sundial outside the House of Lords. But he said there were few left who knew the science behind how sundials work, or even their religious origins. The earliest household clocks known from the archaeological finds are the shadow clocks, 1500 BCE, in ancient Babylonian astronomy. Ancient almanatic sundials of the same era, about 1500 BCE, and their prototype have been discovered on the territory of modern Russia. Much earlier obelisks, once thought to have been used as sundials, placed at temples built in honour of a pharaoh, are now only thought to serve as a memorial. Presumably humans were telling time from shadow lengths at an even earlier date, but this is hard to verify. In roughly 700 BCE, the Old Testament describes a sundial, the dial of Ahaz, mentioned in Isaiah 38:8 and 2 Kings 20:9, possibly the earliest account of a sundial that is anywhere to be found in history, which was likely of Egyptian or Babylonian design. Sundials are believed to have existed in China since ancient times. Very little is known of their history. There is an early reference to sundials from 104 BCE in an assembly of calendar experts. He told the BBC, "Sundials are old hat. Those few people who are making innovative sundials are making extensive use of computerized tools to design them. That's a good thing. To get young people interested in sundials is extraordinarily challenging." Dr. King, who is also chairman of the British Sundial Society, said the group had 600 members in its heyday, as recently as 1995. Numbers have now more than halved, with Italy and USA retaining some of their own member experts. Sundials contain a gnomon, a thin rod that casts a shadow onto a platform etched with different times. As the sun changes during the course of the day, the shadows change as well, reflecting a change of time. The latitude and gradient help decide the precise location, and the gnomon should be pointing at the north celestial pole. The accuracy can vary depending on the time of year. Dr. King, who is the university bell ringer at Cambridge and the keeper of the sundial in Great St. Mary's Church, said those with sundial expertise could design spaceships and power driverless cars because the mathematical insight is akin to the one used for GPS technology. "Whilst we can live without sundials, I'm worried we cannot live without communication satellites, and someone needs to have the know-how to do that," he said. "I don't think education coming through schools these days is satisfactory to replenish people writing code for communication satellites or driverless cars or the rest of it." Parents of Mormon missionaries will be able to hear their children's voices a lot more under new rules that allow the youngsters to call home every week instead of only twice a year. Regular communication with their families is an important part of a missionary service, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints said in a news release on Friday. One of the major purposes of this adjustment is to encourage families to be more involved in their missionaries' efforts and experiences. Effective immediately, missionaries will be allowed to call, text, or do video chats once a week on a designated day called Preparation Day. Previously, they were only allowed to call home on Christmas and Mother's Day. They could email or send letters once a week. The immediate change affects 65,000 Mormons, most under the age of 25, serving in more than 400 missions worldwide. Men are eligible to become missionaries, considered a rite of passage, when they turn 18 and typically serve 2 years. Women are eligible at 19 and serve 18 months. Under the new guidelines, missionaries are encouraged to use judgment in determining the length of phone calls and video chats, according to the press release. Additionally, to avoid disruption to missionaries' schedules, family members are asked not to initiate calls or chats, but instead should wait for the missionary to contact them on his or her weekly preparation day, the release says. The change triggered a slew of reactions among Mormons on social media, with some applauding the move and others expressing concern the faith was getting too soft with missionaries. Others joked that some youngsters may not want to talk to their parents every week. Jaden Brinner, who served as a missionary in Chicago about a decade ago, said he thinks the change will help missionaries who suffer with depression and loneliness. "It's a great way for missionaries to be able to let out some of their feelings, frustrations, and get some support," said Brinner, 29, of Utah. "I think it's going to be a good thing and help missionaries stay out there longer than they have in the past." Mormon scholar Matthew Bowman said he suspects the change is related to the 2012 church decision to lower the age of missionaries from 21 to 19 for women and from 19 to 18 for men. "There have been reports of more missionaries experiencing anxiety and wanting to come home," said Bowman, an associate professor of history at Henderson State University in Arkansas. "The idea here is to keep their spirits up and morale up and lower the degree of separation that they're dealing with," Bowman said. An Alabama church damaged by a tornado is returning a $25,000 donation from a casino because it doesn't support gambling. The pastor of the First Baptist Church of Wetumpka, James Troglen, told a local TV station that church members had voted Sunday to return the contribution from Wind Creek Casinos. Troglen said, church members were extremely moved by the donation, but says he doesn't support legalized gambling, and church members who share his belief thought it would be a conflict to keep the money. Troublin says members hope the money will go to others affected by the tornado. The church was damaged by a twister that roared through the town north of Montgomery on January the 19th. The casino says it also made donations to another church and the town's police department. And finally, a new pastor in a small town spent the first 4 days making personal visits to each of the members, inviting them to come to his first service. The following Sunday, the church was all but empty. Accordingly, the pastor placed a notice in the local newspapers, stating that because the church was dead, it was everyone's duty to give it a decent Christian burial. The funeral would be held the following Sunday afternoon, the notice stated. Morbidly curious, a large crowd turned out for the funeral. In front of the pulpit, they saw a closed coffin smothered with flowers. After the pastor delivered the eulogy, he opened the coffin and invited his congregation to come forward and pay their final respects to their dead church. Filled with curiosity as to what would represent the corpse of the dead church, all the people lined up to look into the coffin. Each mourner peeked into the coffin and quickly turned away with a guilty, sheepish look. In the coffin, tilted at the correct angle, was a large mirror.
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.